Welcome to this your active event on the revival of the EU single market, defining the road ahead. Our program today is supported by VDMA, the Mechanical Engineering Industry Association. I'm Brian Maguire. The European single market is one of the EU's greatest achievements, but it's underperforming according to industry stakeholders. Too much fragmentation, too much bureaucracy, and a lack of harmonized rules. Former Italian Prime Minister Enrico Letta has been tasked with preparing a report on the future of the single market. That report was published in April. It has not been discussed by Europe's heads of state. Letta's report, much more than a market, emphasizes speed, security, and solidarity, and introduces a fifth freedom to the single market designed to boost research, innovation, and education. Some industries, like the mechanical and plant engineering sector, even call for a radical master plan to deepen the single market and to consider the cost burden of the green and digital transitions. Today, we'll hear from the author himself, Enrico Letta, and then a distinguished panel to discuss Letta's report and the way forward for the single market. We'll also have questions throughout the program, so you don't have to wait until the very end to send those. You can send them for Mr. Letta as well. You'll see that in the sidebar, and you can use the hashtag EA Debates for social media and also here as well. So hashtag EA Debates, send your questions. Our social media team will interact with you there. The format this morning, we will have this afternoon, I'm in Washington, D.C., so this morning for me, we have a keynote speech with Enrico Letta, followed by questions and answers. Then we go to the panelists. I'll introduce the panelists at that point as well, and we'll take questions throughout the panel discussion. So you can see the Slido QR code there and use the hashtag single market on Slido. So log in there, send your questions again. Don't wait until the end. So it's my pleasure to introduce now Enrico Letta, the author of the report on the future of the single market, president of the Jacques Delors Institute and former Italian Prime Minister. Thanks for being with us today. Really appreciate your time, sir.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure.
So over the floor is all yours.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for this opportunity, of course. It's a great opportunity for me to share some ideas of the report, to discuss with distinguished panelists and to receive questions and comments. This report has been, since the beginning, a collective exercise because I decided to have many meetings in all the different member states. I was also in DC for some meetings there. And I would be more than happy to continue the discussion in the next weeks. I will be in these days in different member states. I'm now in Austria. Tomorrow I will be in Frankfurt to discuss with the president of the Bundesbank, Joachim Nagel. And then next week in Paris, in Brussels. So it's really a collective exercise, and I would like to continue this collective exercise because we have to be very, I think, very tough by relaunching, first of all, the sense of urgency. That is my fil rouge, the fil rouge of the entire exercise, a sense of urgency. There's no more time. We are wasting time. And there's no more time. We need to act because the last legislature, this legislature that is at the end, was a very positive legislature in terms of achievements from the European institution side and from national governments at the European level. But it was also a legislature in which we as European institutions and national governments, we reacted to crisis. Now the main point is how to act instead of just reacting. And we need to act, I think this is the key issue today, on this big topic on how to complete the single market, how to relaunch it, starting, and this is the core probably of my report, from the three main sectors of the single market that weren't at the very beginning of Delors' journey on the table of the single market, discussing with the member states. So energy, telecom, and first of all, financial services. This is not by chance, I think, that on these three subjects, today the lack of competitiveness is bigger with the US and with the rest of the world. Today and tomorrow is an important day in Europe because there's the visit of President Xi Jinping And I think this topic of the relationship, of the very complicated relationship in terms of competitiveness with China, and the same with the US and other part of the world, has to be at the very center of the reflection. So the core of the report is how to be able to recuperate the leftovers, how to be able to start from the leftovers, this new life of the single market. And of course, it's not easy, because on these three leftovers, there's today great importance of an approach of national sovereignty. But my report is not against a national sovereignty. My report is a report that is trying to convince leaders that national sovereignty and European sovereignty can be all together in a boost for new competitiveness at European level. This is why I propose on the three subjects, three different roadmaps on energy, on telecom, and first of all on financial services, on how to integrate more the three sectors, how to give power to a system where the national authorities can work together with the European authorities in an integrated system, the possibility so to consolidate and to scale, not against the consumers, but applying rules protecting consumers that are the core of the European single market at a more at a bigger relevant market on some of these subjects, and on the most important point, that is the financial services, the idea to launch this new project, that is the Savings and Investments Union. Why this new name? Only to rebrand? No, it is not just rebranding. It's a new journey for a sector that was probably the biggest failure within the single market, because the Capital Markets Union was created 10 years ago, but it was based probably on the bet on how to involve the UK and on how to have London as financial capital of the entire European Union at 28. We failed because of Brexit, and we weren't able to relaunch the journey of the single market on financial services. Today, I think there's a new potential mission for the integration of financial services. This new potential mission is linked to the big question mark for the future of the European Union, that is how to finance the green, digital and just transition. Why I see a link and why I propose a link? Because I think there's a big need to have also private money to finance the transition, the just, green and digital transition. Private money, sorry, first of all, to I was saying private money, first of all, to be able to keep our savings in Europe. Today, too many savings of the European savers are going to the US, and it is not good news. It's the demonstration of a very good and attractive US-American financial market and very poor and non-integrated European market. So a more integrated European market can be attractive, and so we can keep our savings in Europe, and we can link them with some tools. My report is a toolbox, some tools. You can find these tools in the report on how to create incentives to investments and to savings to go in the direction of financing the transition. So it is clear that this, I would say, mission can be successful only if there's incentives, so only if it is profitable. So the list of incentives or potential incentives are there, and I hope the leaders and European institutions can go in that direction. There's a second reason why I think this Savings and Investment Union can be a very important success and a very important leverage, because I think relaunching or launching for the first time a big private pillar to finance the transition is, in my view, the only way to convince countries from the north of Europe to say yes, to have a new public investment leg after the end of the close end of Next Generation EU. Otherwise, I think it would be very complicated to find an agreement among the 27 on the post-Next Generation EU. There's today clearly two different positions within the European Council, and I think it would be impossible to have one of them winning on the other. It's impossible for many political reasons. It is possible to find a compromise, and part of the compromise is to put on the table as precondition to have a public investment leg, to put on the table a private pillar, a successful private pillar. This is the core of the report, is the core of the report also because it's the precondition to be successful with the transition. We decided to have the transition. I'm a strong advocate for the transition, of the transition, but to be serious and credible, now we have to land with the transition. That means we need to find money to finance the way in which the transition, the green, digital and just transition will be part of our common life daily in the next decade. That will be important for all the different aspects of our economy, for the change of our industrial system. So that means also new industrial policies there. In the report, there are many other aspects. I don't want to be too long, so I would like just to end up with two titles that are important for me. One title is linked to the fifth freedom, so the need for the single market to relaunch his mission to have a European Union, more successful on innovation, research, skills, data. The single market until now was based on four freedom: the freedom of movement of goods, services, capitals and persons. I think it's very important today to work on this fifth freedom. That is one of the topics where we are lagging behind. The other main topic is all the social part of the single market that I would like to rebrand with the provocation, if I may say, of the freedom to stay. Freedom to stay means that the single market can't be only considered as freedom to move, can't be only considered as an opportunity for those who like the freedom to move. But we need to consider that the single market is an opportunity, has to be an opportunity for all the European citizens. That means addressing the problem, the social problems of the brain drain that is creating spoliation in many regions and many countries, that is becoming an urgent social problem, not only in the countries that of origin of the movement of people, but so countries that are welcoming people because of prices of housing and many other subject about a too big density. And that means also many other aspects of social problems that are today part of our, even of our electoral campaign that is beginning in these very days. And the electoral campaign, in my view, will be very important to set up the scene for the next legislature. Last time, the beginning of the legislature was very good in launching the Green Deal. I hope this legislature will start with this idea of relaunching the single market on this aspect, on how to have a speed, secure, and with the possibility to, to implement the word solidarity in a different way with this idea of much more than a market. That is a very dolor-centered topic, and single market is not just for details or business people. Single market is first of all for the citizens, and citizens are at the core of the relaunch also of the economy of our continent. And I end up by relaunching this sense of urgency and this difficulty with the décrochage that we are experiencing with the US and with other parts of the world. We need to be totally aware of this problem, and I hope the next legislature will see the European leaders, the next European Parliament, the next European Commission working on these topics with this sense of urgency. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. We have about 10 minutes, I think, for just to chat through some of these issues. And I encourage the audience just to send questions on Slido as well, and we'll bring those to Mr. Letta as quickly as we can. Let's focus on the citizens and SMEs and do it in reverse, because a lot of the criticism of the single market and, you know, the bureaucracy, it doesn't work for a lot of people because we're dealing with 27 markets. It's difficult enough for large businesses to get traction in the market, never mind small ones that don't manage the compliance issues or the artificial barriers that still remain in so many markets. You know, in your report, walk us through what you recommend in terms of support for SMEs, how we need to restructure, and, you know, we're talking about the election, how does that translate, how will it translate for the average citizen as well? You've talked about the cosmopolitan side of this, they kind of get it, they have the flexibility, they have the experience, but a lot of Europe doesn't function that way. How do we make this function for the whole of Europe?
Your point is very important, because when I say a single market for all, I say, first of all, on the business side, single market that can be interesting and attractive, not only for the big companies. The economic European system is based on SMEs. And until now, too few SMEs are taking advantage or are exploiting the advantages of the single market. Why? Because the single market is too fragmented. We have 27 legal systems, 27 taxation systems, and for an SME is very complicated. It's very difficult to deal with this fragmentation and these difficulties. This is why one of the main proposals of the single market report, the future of the single market report, is based, for instance, of this idea of the 28th regime. That means creating a sort of passport tool that can be a master key that can be used and chosen by a company, an SME, or maybe also from someone from abroad. I presented this idea, for instance, in the US last week, and I had the feeling that many investors could be really interested in having one passport to enter the European Union and to invest with just one legal system, without the need to change, moving from one country to another. And the same for SMEs. It is a proposal. I strongly believe that this proposal can be, once again, a good compromise that can fly, because it is the way not to eliminate the different, I would say, commercial laws. I know very well it's impossible to cancel, and it is not feasible. But we have to add one 28th regime on some issues where the possibility for companies to use it can simplify. At the same time, in the report, there are many different proposals on how to, I would say, to limit all the problems related to the fragmentation that today is taking place. The fact that the enforcement is not well done among the 27, I would say, makes impossible to have a level playing field, and many problems in the implementation. So simplification and cutting red tape are part of the proposals. And I strongly believe that the success of next legislature is really linked to the idea to have a strong possibility to work on all these subjects with a different approach and with simplification and with eliminating fragmentation.
Thank you. You were Georgetown last week, right? And it's 10 minutes from where I am right now. So that's in D.C. You go across the river from Georgetown, you're in Virginia, and you go up the road literally 10 minutes, and you're in Maryland as well. It's three different jurisdictions. I don't think a lot of Europeans appreciate that it's not quite one single market here either. And let's talk about the fifth freedom a little bit as well. Now, this really touches a little bit on the brain drain that Europe faces too, and how we need to keep our talent within Europe too. Do you think that the single market is limiting those who are ambitious, those who would scale up their businesses? They go some, you know, across the United States, for example, in particular. And your report, how does it address this kind of maintenance of talent within Europe and the capacity to scale up and with speed? Because you speak a lot about the urgency of this and the need to do this quickly, you know, to react and get it done, not to think about it too long.
You know, I had the feeling that until now we considered the problem of brain drain within the European Union as a sort of collateral damage of the mobility, and the mobility is good by definition. I am a big fan of mobility, but at the same time, I think we have to consider the problem in a wider way. And today we have too many regions, too many countries within the European Union that are losing large part of our youngest, brightest population because of the opportunities of mobility. I don't want to say that it is bad for these countries and these regions. It can be good. It can be good if they are able to re-attract these talents. So it means working for the next round of the cohesion policy to tools that can be able to create incentives for people to come back to the origin regions or to the origin countries, and at the same time to work on the topic of services. That is one of the main problems we have today. Services of general interest are today in a problematic situation in many regions and in many countries. We have to work to avoid a sort of desertification of services. That is today one of the main problems, one of the main pushes for families or workers to leave one country and to go in another to allow their kids to stay better. It is clear that it's absolutely comprehensible, but at the same time we have to work to create the possibility for services of general interest to be present everywhere in Europe on many aspects. So there are many proposals in the report, but if I may say, not enough for what is needed. I wanted to launch a sort of big provocation, long-term provocation with this idea of the fifth freedom related also to the brain drain, because fifth freedom is also related to how to relaunch innovation, research. One is one of the sectors where we are lagging behind. I add one chapter on space, for instance. But at the same time, I wanted to put and to link the fifth freedom to the social problems and to the freedom to stay, because it is really today something that is becoming a sort of red alarm in Europe. And we are under-evaluating the impact of this, also in the countries where there's more attractiveness. I can tell you that for me it was very interesting the visit I had in the Netherlands, where I understood that one of the main social problems today is the cost of housing, because of the big attractiveness of the Netherlands today, first of all on the students level, and the consequence on housing is becoming a crucial problem for the rest of the population.
Let me just touch on that. We have a question here from, I know you have to go in just a moment, so just a couple of questions for you. One from MEP Josiane Coutillard. She's a Maltese MEP, and she says, we need to work harder at ensuring better free and affordable movement for those living in peripheral and insular regions, including Avai Island mainstreaming. Any thoughts on that?
Yes, I put on the report one part, for instance, on maritime transport. That is a key point. And another big point is on healthcare, medical furnitures. There are regions, Malta, for instance, is one of them, that are suffering very much of the, I would say, the distance, and being peripheric means also being not at the same level of the rest of Europe in terms of, for instance, medical furnitures. And that is unacceptable, because we are a single market, a single European Union, and our citizens, I would say, deserves to be treated with the best possibilities. So yes, I think it's a crucial topic. I will attend in Malta in autumn the event organized by the peripheral regions in Europe, and I strongly believe it is a key issue, and is of course a key issue related also to the sea and to the maritime transportation. That is part of the report. There's a chapter on that.
Okay, thank you. Last question, and you can jump to your next meeting. From America Tatala, Mr. Letta spoke about SMEs, but what about big companies, including big tech companies? Why most of them are created and registered in the US or Asia, and what should be done to have EU big tech or more EU companies among top global corporations?
In general, the main answer is related to the fifth freedom. If we are able to put the fifth freedom at the center of everything, that means an environment that can be attractive and interesting. But at the same time, it is not just that. There's also a big link with the problem of the financial services and the possibility to invest and to have financial services with a strong financial market, because of course innovation and deep tech means the need to have to be financed and to scale up, to grow up. And of course the big problem here is the difference between our services, financial services market, and the US. In the report I put also the proposal of the deep tech stock exchange, a dedicated deep tech unique stock exchange. That is, in my view, that I hope this idea would be considered, because it is a good idea to relaunch a good and a better environment for high-tech companies, startup. I was also in my journey around Europe, from Malaga to Helsinki to Athens. The idea to meet people, young startuppers, and to listen always from them. The big dream is to go to the US and to find their money, and to find there the good environment, and to find there the good link with center of research, with a lot of money and a lot of people, is of course one of our biggest problems, because when they leave and when they go to the US, it's very complicated to attract them. So I think these three aspects are part of the solution. Of course, it's easier to talk about these solutions in a, I would say, webinar like the one, thanks to Euractiv, we are doing now, rather than having the successful regulations, proposals. By the way, I mentioned regulations. One of the important part of the report is my regulation preference. So the fact that I say clearly we have to stop directives and we have to move from directives to regulations, because it's the only way to avoid bad enforcement and to simplify. And I strongly believe that this choice is one of the most important ones.
Thank you. We may find that Europe looks a whole lot more attractive after the November election as well. So not that we wish that necessarily. Enrico Letta, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate that and the contribution. And congratulations on your report. It was extremely well received. So we'll speak again, I'm sure. Take care. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Let's introduce our panel for the rest of the discussion. Please keep sending in your questions. And I have them in front of me. We'll bring those to the panelists, the ones you sent in for Enrico Letta. We'll bring those in some context to the panelists as well. We're going to introduce the panel. They're each going to have 60 seconds to do their introduction, and then we'll get straight into the discussion. Today we have with us Dita Sharanzova. She's the Vice President of the European Parliament, Czech MP with Renew Group. We have Sandra Parthi. She's President of INT Section of the ESC and Head of Brussels Office of IW Cologne. And Carl Hausken. He's the President of the BDMA at the Mechanical Engineering Industry Association. Thank you for joining us today and for your patience. I always with Mr. Letta as well. Dita, let's kick off with you. 60 seconds for your key message for today.
Thank you very much, Brian. Hopefully you can hear me.
Perfect.
Yes, okay, good. Well, I've been working in the Internal Market Committee for 10 years, so I do welcome this new attempt how to make sure that the internal market works for the businesses and citizens. So in this regard, fingers crossed that we also make sure that there is a political will to deliver on this report. Mr. Prime Minister mentioned that for successful outcome of his report, money is needed. I would say also a political will is needed to deliver, that it would not be just cherry picking, but it will be really to deliver on the overall package. If you want me to say where I see the most positive part of it, I would say that I very much welcome the call for the capital markets. That what has been already explained by Mr. Letta. I think we need to get rid of the barriers in this sector and to make sure that we have a real capital market in the European Union. Of course, I also welcome his call, for instance, for the high-speed trains between the European capitals. On the side where I would have question marks is the calls for how to create European champions and basically the idea of opening the taps of the state aid in Europe. I am not convinced that this is the best way how to achieve competitiveness of Europe. Overall, I would say that Mr. Letta is a doctor who said what we should do to achieve healthy Europe. And I hope that everybody is ready to get rid of the cheeseburger and start working on healthy Europe.
Thank you. I appreciate that metaphor. Sandra, over to you. 60 seconds.
Yes, thank you very much for the opportunity to be here and to share a bit the view from the ESC, which of course is the employers and the employees as well as the civil societies forum. I think what we have been discussing also previous to Mr. Letta's report, but also now based on what he has proposed is really investment is the key factor. Investment is really the main point to have a successful revival of the single market. So big support for this idea of investment and savings union. I would like to point out though that the private investments currently make up more than 85% of all investments in the EU. Including obviously for the green and digital transition. So sometimes it might sound as if there's only public money that is driving the change, but that's not the case. The vast majority is actually already being put on the table by private actors. But obviously what makes a lot of sense is to have a joint European investment facility. That's much better than having a multitude of uncoordinated national ones. The same applies actually also to the area of industrial policy. We don't get anywhere if everyone continues to promote their national industry interests or their perceived national industry interests. We do have to come up with a coordinated European approach and really benefiting from the comparative advantages that we have in the different member states. Furthermore, I believe also that we do now with the Green Deal and a number of other legislative proposals, we actually do have a quite comprehensive regulatory framework in place. And I think now it is really about making it work. So really enforcing it, using it, and preferably enforcing it in a harmonized way across all member states. I don't think we should be adding much more to it. Really the focus should be now on actually implementing it, helping companies to deal with all these new proposals, all these new requirements before we start adding more. So that also links up with the demand of preventing further fragmentation of the single market, where we really would also support the approach of going more into the direction of regulation as opposed to directives that tend to be implemented rather diversely across the member states. Thank you.
Thank you, Sandra. Carl, over to you.
Okay, yeah, thanks for making me part of this. For us, it's important to mention representing, well, we call it the mechanical engineering industry. I don't like that expression because mechanical, as much as I like it, is kind of old school. So it's more the industry that manufactures components, machines, and big equipment. And we are representing over 3 million employees in Europe and over a million in Germany alone. And the success of this industry is to a large extent due to the success of the single market in the last 30 years. So there is a very positive conclusion so far of the effects of the single markets. However, I think all of us, we are worried about the current state of the Union, where we see a lot of stronger nationalistic views and even protectionist reflexes and activities inside the EU. And I think if you look at national subsidies, that's a good example now that they are easier to do than before under the new framework. If I look at our industry, I'm a little bit afraid that if you look down the road in medium term, we might see battery cell manufacturing, we might see chip manufacturing in many EU states that are beyond the market demand, because there is a high temptation for national and regional governments to support such manufacturing capacities beyond the EU support that is there through IPCEIs anyway. So we really need a new political push for the completion of the EU single market. It has to be the top political priority for the next commission and for the next parliament. And it's not enough to mention this completion of the EU single market as kind of a soapbox speech, but there must be a dedicated and shared plan to remove existing barriers in the single market. It is extremely difficult to realize that in detail, and I think the capital union is a very nice example. And a lot of that is due to the national interests that remain to be in conflict. So we believe we also have to ask ourselves the question whether the EU is really structured in a way which allows success or whether restructuring is required. The latter report certainly is an excellent starting point for this.
Thank you. Dita Shantova, let's follow on a little bit from that as well. You're not a big fan of state aid, I hear. So what about the deregulation that's necessary to achieve a more harmonized single market? Do you think Leda goes far enough with this, or is there more to be done? And just to take up his point about using regulations instead of directives as well, is that the way forward?
Definitely, and I do agree with what just Carl mentioned. It's been also my experience that whenever we have a regulation, we were sure that the implementation is done in the same way in all member states. while when we have a directive, there is the so-called Christmas tree effect in every member state, and sometimes then the Commission has to double check whether actually the addition by the national parliament reach the goal of the directive itself. So very much in favor of regulation. Second, I do agree that we need to do much more on the enforcement side. So I've been also calling to have for the first time in the history a commissioner responsible for the enforcement, kind of watchdog, who will just check how the implementation is done in practice, that we also pay more attention on the REFIT program, which is basically to see how different laws fit together, if there is no any overlap. I mean, we've been talking in Brussels for some time about one in, one out principle. So once we adopt one legislation, another should be considered to be removed. It has not been met. This goal is still valid, and I very much hope that the next commission will deliver, that it will not be just the words on the paper, but that we will turn it into reality. And the reason for it is that what we know from different surveys and polls, that we are losing the trust of the businesses in the European integration. So I think we need to listen more carefully to the voices of those that have always appreciated the benefits of the single internal market.
Just to extend your healthcare metaphor, probably Europe needs rehab when it comes to new lawmaking, and one in, one out doesn't seem to be working that well. This is what Frans Timmermans was supposed to do during this tenure as well, and we don't seem to have got much traction with it. Sandra, you talk about 85% of investment coming from the private sector in this as well. How much of that is supported by European public funds indirectly as well, whether it's development projects with the EIB or others like that as well? Is there a recalibration in terms of how private money can be leveraged, like we had with the Juncker plan, for example, and subsequent plans, to really enhance the single market and to enhance the export capability?
Yeah, I mean, there is obviously some support also coming from European funds and European Investment Bank, for instance. So various pots where companies could potentially also tap into. However, what we also experience and what we see is that sometimes it is a bit complex to actually access these different funds or to actually know about their existence and to also see how an SME could actually benefit from this to do whatever it is that they are doing. But overall, yes, there is sort of a steering quality to European and funds and European money that really would give a signal to private investors as to what the direction of travel really is. So definitely, if the EU provides green bonds or provides other things, that does drive the investments, of course. So I do believe that it helps. On the other hand, one really must ensure that it is easy enough for companies to actually access that money. We don't have the situation here as in the US with venture capitalists in the same way. So we really have to make sure that the banking system that is currently the most relevant for financing and funding our companies remains accessible and becomes potentially a bit more accessible to them. And that would already go a long way of helping us in the transition.
Thank you. Carl, is the inefficiency within the single market, is this an accidental inefficiency or is this deliberate artificial barriers which continue to be erected by individual member states?
I wouldn't say deliberate. I think we have a combination of interests, and we have conflicting targets, conflicting objectives, and We perceive regulation in the EU often as the result of trying to get everything under one umbrella, given regulation, covering all kinds of interests. And at the end of the day, you have a super detailed, annoying, top bureaucratic regulation. So I agree, yes, the discussion, are we talking about regulation or directives, is an important discussion, but even more important is, what is good regulation? What is efficient and right regulation? And the devil is often in the detail. You know, I tell you just one detail you may not be aware of. When we talk about Kreislaufwirtschaft, about recycling waste and getting back into the industrial manufacturing process, EU legislation at this point in time is hindering companies to do this cross-border. So if you have a facility to recycle plastic in the Netherlands and you would like to hand it over in the next process step to Germany, you cannot. And we see a lot of these things which are preventing things from happening because things are too detailed.
Thank you. Ita, I want to come back to this question here we have from Zoltan Skeres. It says, telco companies have most customers in the US and some Asian markets, but prices and quality tends to be better in EU markets according to benchmarks. Is it possible that there are more significant factors than market size? And just tag on with that in terms of competitiveness. Are we being sufficiently competitive, or are we focused just too much on scale and size rather than efficiency within the single market?
I think what should be really key for the next Commission and the European Parliament is the competitiveness of Europe. We see the US acting very fast when it comes to the, of all the technological progress. And the question is always what we should do in Europe. I mean, Karel gave one very concrete example of the barriers that are existing in the European market. When it comes to the telecom sector, I think we will hear a lot of about consolidation of the market in the sector. It has been floated already for some weeks and months in Brussels already. So I think we will have the discussion on the how to consolidate telecoms market in Europe during the next legislation. I think for me, the core is, and I will go back to my introductory remarks, is not how and where to pump the money, but is really to create the level playing field for the companies. And there, I think we are really struggling. I hear a lot from the companies that we focus so much on regulation that sometimes we overregulate the environment when it's not needed. So I hope that we will really think twice before we adopt any new legislation. There is always a kind of political spirit to produce more and more, but I think that if we focus on enforcement, if we focus on refit to see whether the law is still relevant that is currently in practice, that's the way forward.
Do you think that Europe has European Union has a market which is too open in terms of the United States and China competing within Europe? And Europe is facing barriers in China and the US, which are disproportionate as well. Does that limit our competitiveness as well?
I think it's the question that we've been, trying to resolve during the last 5 years. It's very much linked to this concept of open strategic autonomy. I'm a liberal person, so you will not hear me answering your question by saying that we should have Europe that is more inwards looking. I still want to have Europe that is open. Of course, Europe that thinks about its companies, about the European framework, about the European level playing field, about European SMEs. But I don't think that the way forward is that Europe that will completely cut off the ties with especially our like-minded countries.
Yes, but at the same time, do we make it too easy for these countries? And are we, put it another way, are we not forceful enough in making our way into external markets? It's not that we limit the participation of US and China, depending on which sector you want to look at, but that we are not forceful enough pushing forward.
I think it has changed over the last 5 years. I think we were mainly pushed by the previous Trump's administration to realize that we have to think a lot about ourselves. Now we don't know who will be the next US president, and the same thinking is back in Europe. To make sure that we think, as I said, about European companies and European interests. And it's normal, it's logical, and I do agree with it. But at the same time, I think also it's in the interest of the consumers to have wide choice, to have possibilities to make a right decision. So I don't want to see Europe that is completely inwards looking. That's what I said. So I do see the merits that we have to do more in Europe. I think we have our lesson learned also from the COVID pandemic. We see the dependency that we had in energy sector, for instance, in medical field. We have adopted a new rules when it comes to government procurement in defense, for instance, but let's do it in a way that Europe still remains open.
Thank you, Carl. Yeah, Carl, go ahead.
You can feel my impatience. First of all, I would really like to strengthen the point that Dieter has made. Let's keep our borders open. If we talk about competitiveness, the first thing we have to do is look at our own competitiveness. What can we do better and more efficient within Europe before we reflect upon how can we restrict others of entering Europe? And then I think there is a large potential that we can still release within Europe, number one. Number two, most of our industries are globalized industries, and they depend on open borders. And we should ask ourselves the question, what about free trade agreements? What has the existing commission reached in FTAs? I think it's a poor performance. And when we look forward, that has to be on a totally different level. Why is the EU not able to make Mercosur happening? Just because, let's say, some farmers move the tractors on some main roads. So there's a lot we can do, staying open and improving our own performance and competitiveness. And that should be the task for the next parliament and the next commission.
Just on this, Carl, free trade agreements, they tend to be quite divisive across the political spectrum as well. Now, the center is more or less aligned on the benefit of free trade agreements. You have factions to the left and to the right, which will likely increase during the next legislature, and which would oppose free trade agreements strongly. How do you make that argument to the voters that we need to have a more outward-looking approach, we need to be more competitive? Is that something that will sit on a manifesto and translate well, or is this just something that business speaks about and business focuses on?
Well, certainly the key is the public discussion and public information. Yes, we have to convince people about the positive effects of trade and globalization. And we have seen different trends in the past. And I think we need a courageous commission and also a courageous parliament, which is willing to explain such issues. I'm not that pessimistic on the very left and the very right. I think we will see a large a central fraction also in the parliament. And when I talk to representatives of the European Parliament, I always get a fairly positive feedback on trade matters, but it doesn't happen. Certainly, there will be no classical free trade agreements anymore that are just about trade. There will always be other issues included, but there's always this sump coming up. I don't know why. There will always be other issues included. The question is, to what extent? And if we overload trade agreements with other political issues, we will never make one. And that's the key. I'm not advocating 100% free trade agreements, but I'm advocating free trade agreements that take other policy fields into consideration in a reasonable way.
Thank you. Sandra, let's touch a little bit on what Mr. Lotte said about the pensions union, the savings union and investment unions as well. How do you translate that for your members? What does that look like in practical terms for your members in terms of the single market and competitiveness?
Before I do that, can you allow me to also touch a bit up on the point that we were just discussing about the market? Because I think there's also one aspect where we as EU still have quite a lot of homework to do, and that's actually our own market surveillance. So we do have a lot of requests on European companies as to how they should produce, what kind of standards they need to follow, etc. And the companies obviously do that. They are trying to be as compliant as possible. But then we tend to find a lot of products on our markets that should not be here, that have not ticked the boxes, that are not compliant with all these rules. They come through online platforms where people order, and that does really mess a bit with our single market. We put these burdens on our companies, and then we don't actually ensure the market surveillance and to ensure that products who do not fulfill our own criteria do not get access to the market. So I think this is really something that deserves a bit more attention, that deserves potentially much more staff and personnel on the national level to check what kind of goods are getting into our market. But then switching to the question you actually asked in terms of the capital and or the investments and the savings union. Yes, indeed. I mean, for companies, it's really important to have this access. We tend to have a debate about the capital markets union being a bit of a silver bullet. And one of the things that sort of stops the silver bullet from actually sort of being used is this whole debate about the insolvency law. And on that one, I must say, I'm a bit pessimistic because insolvency law per se is not something that is a standalone law. That is something that you could just like tweak a bit and then all of a sudden things work. It's very much intertwined with a lot of other labor market requirements, with a lot of other tax issues, etc. So to sort of give a little bit the message that, we just need to, you know, overcome a bit of pushback on national insolvency laws, and then we're going to have a super functioning capital markets union, oversimplifies the situation a bit too much, I'm afraid. So we do have to work indeed on the capital markets union. I think we have a lot of elements already in place that would allow for the EU to actually provide more funding to companies to actually sort of build on what we have with the next generation EU budget, where indeed the EU Commission has gone to the markets and has raised some money that it now can distribute to member states and to national economies. So maybe that is something that should be developed a bit further and where a bit of thought should go into that. Because as we all know, coming up with new regulations on anything tax related in our system of sort of consents is probably not going to go fast. And we do need to act fast in order to help companies to cope with all the new requirements.
Thank you, Sandra. Dita, a question from Anna Zernowska. How can we use modern digital tools, platforms to create agile, service-driven areas where innovative companies can get access to the resources, such as the European health data space, but as an enabler for the private sector players? Can we do that?
Can you please repeat it? It was such a complex question.
Yeah, I think we'll summarize it by basically we've got the European health data space and we have the transferability and interoperability of data for health purposes. We don't seem to have that for business to the degree that would make it more efficient in terms, we could look at public tenders, we could look at the financial side. All I don't like to overuse the phrase one-stop shop, but essentially that where the interoperability across all 27 member states simplifies the process and harmonizes that data, saving time and speeding the process.
Yes, I think what you have seen over the past 5 years in the European legislation was really focused on digital. What we should do for the businesses, how we should help businesses really to grow in Europe. And there we adopted three key legislation, which is Digital Services Act, Digital Market Act, and Artificial Intelligence Act. Now we will see how the implementation goes. Some of them are already in force. Some of them, like the AI Act, will be in fully implemented in 2 years. When it comes to the health sector there, I am very happy that after the COVID pandemic, there has been a big push to do more in the health sector in the European Union. The person that asked the question is very right, saying that we are delivering now more for the citizens and that we should do more for the businesses. I do agree. We have passed recently a new legislation in the European Parliament, which would help, for instance, the transfer of medical data across the European Union. And I keep receiving a lot of inputs from this sector that wants really to that wants the European Union to do more. It has to be said that in the past, before the COVID, health was one of the policy that was completely left in the hands of the member states. There was no political willingness to do more. It was basically based on the exchange of information and very limited cooperation. The lesson learned from the COVID is obvious that this is the sector where we should invest more. This is the sector where we have to use all the tools that we have at our disposal to make sure that we really create also the European market in the health sector. So we are on the track. Maybe it's not the speed that the person that asked the question wished to have, but we are on the track.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Carl, anything to add there?
Yeah, well, we're looking with a great focus on the capital union, and I think this is right. Yes, it's a good priority. However, there are many other things that need to be done as well. There are many other restrictions, stuff that is not harmonized. So we should not focus just on the capital union. And I think in the latter report, he describes very, very nicely also other fields. I would like just to add one more example from the real business life, which is cross-border heavy transport. So let's assume there is a factory or there's a power station being built and that needs a hydrogen turbine coming from another EU country. Now this hydrogen turbine needs to be transported on public roads. You have 27 different regulations. You know, when you have this heavy transport coming to the border between Germany and the Netherlands, it is a nightmare. So the guy who is transporting this freaking part, he has to look at different legislations to get this part transported just cross-border in the EU. That's not Europe. And I think there are a lot of these relatively simple things that are not rocket science. I agree to Sandra that the insolvency law is kind of a complex issue. And there are much simpler things that do create value for businesses in Europe and specifically for small and medium-sized businesses.
Thank you. Just on that as well, I gotta go back to the United States, and that it's you move from Maryland to Delaware here, you have to do exactly the same kind of compliance as well, which I find surprising in the United States too. But that's not to say that Europe can't be more efficient than the United States if it gets its act together in this regard too. Carl, just to stay on this for a moment as well, practical examples of how the letter report could supercharge Europe's single market.
Well, there is a whole chapter on better regulation. I was mentioning better regulation before as a key. And in the latter report, you find a whole chapter on that. How could regulation be more efficient and have more relevance? That's very much key. We also believe that the capital union, the telecommunication union, all the important aspects are in the latter report. And that makes me optimistic, by the way, because as Enrico mentioned, it's not a report that he just made sitting in his ivory tower, but it is a report that is the result of many, many consultations throughout Europe and through different stakeholders within the European society and economy. So if there is a key message I'd like to place is, use this report, use the letter report in the years to come, learn from it and make it happen.
Dina, the political temperature on this at the moment, the report was well received in general. Everybody has something to say about it. But the overall approach seems to be well received, workable document. How do you think it'll translate over the next couple of years?
$1 million question.
it's very
timely report, because it's just before the European elections, before the new European Commission will start its mandate, before the European Parliament starts working. So it's very timely. Now we need to keep talking about this report. So thank you very much again, Euroactive, for organizing also this conference. We need to get all the inputs from the businesses, from the industry side, and we need to push the politician to deliver. Otherwise, it's yet another report, you know. I've read, for instance, one of the goals, which is to increase the R&D funding. Well, the 3% target has been here since 2010, and we haven't met it yet. So it's all nice to read it in every single European Council conclusions that it's important and we should do it, but we do not do it. So I think it's all about the political courage, political will, and we need to get the push from the businesses and industry sector. For me, the alarm was to read that the trust of the European businesses is at its lowest to the European project. So, I mean, this is the wake-up call. Let's be very honest. So, and now you have, you know, you have the recipe, you have the book, you have the paper, you have the recommendation. So just follow it.
But you need an ambassador of sorts to push that through. Somebody who's inside the chamber, who's going to get, and within the Parliament and within Council as well, and not least the Commission. So, can you envisage a champion for this report who will advocate on Letta's behalf and get this done?
I'm positive because what I keep hearing for the last 2 weeks in Brussels and Strasbourg is that the next European Commission will basically focus on two main issues. One, competitiveness, and second, defense. So, when it comes to competitiveness, it's all in this report. We need to have Commissioner Timmermans for Green Deal agenda, being the first vice executive vice president. Let's do the same for the competitiveness in the internal market. And let's yet another commissioner for enforcement. So we have to reshuffle the portfolios, we have to reshuffle the priorities in Europe, and make sure that the next 5 years will be really about how to deliver on this report.
Commissioner Breton's name seems to be written all over enforcement, defense, and competitiveness, if he makes it back again as well. All right, we have a few minutes left, so let's take another couple of questions, and then we'll do our wrap-up as well. Dimitri says the governments are still, this is something's response to, governments are still answerable to their electorate, so they cannot avoid national oriented industrial policies. The key, however, could be that these policies could find their way in a comprehensive European innovative system as well under the document. Sandra, you want to respond to that? I'm not convinced this is an electorally sensitive report or topic. It's not going to cut through too much, but the practicality of getting this done would have huge consequences as well. So, you know, how does your organization, your membership, persuade governments to make this shift in the direction of the letter report as well? You know, we talk about the political high level, here as well, but they will listen to the voices of the constituents of their industries as well to drive this. So from your side, what do you anticipate for the next couple of years in delivering here?
Well, I mean, again, a very difficult question. How do you actually make politicians listen to the good insights that we have and to actually sort of turn this into something actionable? But I think it doesn't mean that you cannot answer to your national interests by combining what you perceive is important for your own country and your economy with what happens in other countries across borders. So I think that's actually a win-win to just coordinate much better what is going to be supported, funded, sort of decided as a priority, because otherwise it could just become sort of contradictory that, you know, you build some kind of infrastructure to the border and then it ends there because on the other side of the border, they haven't had the same priority. So basically you might have wasted quite a lot of capital that way. So I think to really align better the agendas, the planning, as far as national governments are actually involved. It's not always the case. I mean, sometimes it's simply the business sector that has to make those decisions and has to make the benefit analysis as to whether or not something is going to make sense. Another thing that I really would like to sort of underline a bit and potentially also ask governments to take up a bit more is we sometimes tend to be a bit doom and gloom about our industry, about our economy. And actually, we do have quite a lot of innovative companies in Europe. They do quite a lot of good things. They develop high quality products that really are better than the ones from other parts of this globe. So we do have quite many and rather diverse industrial clusters. So there's a lot of things that we actually can promote and that member states should also promote, be it through international standard setting organizations, for instance, but also be it through procurement, through the uptake of products developed in Europe by sort of the public sector. That would already go a long way in showing that it's not only America that can be great, but it's also Europe that is great and has great companies, actors, and products. And we should not be, you know, playing this game as if we would not be there. We would not be able to compete. We can, but we might actually have to sort of be a bit more, vocal about it.
First of all, thank you. We're going to wrap up now with 60 seconds from each of our panelists. Dita, you want to kick off? 60 seconds just to summarize.
I think the proposal is a very welcome step. It's very timely. We need to have now a political courage from the member states and the new European Parliament to deliver. I think a lot is at stake. The internal market has been always appreciated by all European citizens as the main benefit of the European integration. So it's now time to really deliver on our long-standing priority, which has been to complete the internal market. So let's be courageous.
Thank you. Sandra, 60 seconds.
Right. Dita used the sort of analogy of health before. I used the one of trying to actually lose some weight, somebody who's trying to go on a diet. We all know what we need to do. We have actually all the instruments at our hand. We just sometimes somehow don't get the motivation up to go for our run or to go to the gym. So this is really what we now need to find. We really need to find the inner courage, the inner motivation to go and start with the good examples, the ideas that are all out there. We know what to do. We just have to do it.
Thank you so much, Sandra. Carl, last word.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. We know what to do and we know how to do. And the challenge now is to get it done. I think the EU elections are a great chance to revitalize the whole process in the EU, and the expectation of citizens to do that is there. We have to improve EU legislation. We have to make it more efficient. And when citizens start to see that and to feel that, I think we will see a very positive overall impact within the EU. I would like to mention that if you look at legislation and if you look at regulation in Europe, there has to be a trust in companies and a trust also in the citizen and in the people. We don't need detailed overregulation. As much as citizens need to trust the politicians, politicians should also trust their citizens.
Thank you. There's a novel concept. Thanks so much, Dieter, Sandra, Carl, thanks so much for your time today. Also to Enrico Letta for speaking with us earlier as well. Let me just thank our invisible team who make all this happen. So Anna Wilson, Pablo, Tamara, and the team in Brussels, and also to VDMA for the support for the program today. So let's find the courage. Let's move forward. Thank you so much for joining us today.